problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more.
Beach, drive, drop, car, Central Avenue. We're all about the Sunshine City. RadioCentral.com.
Dwight betrayed me once before, so this is his strike two. You know what they say, fool me once, strike one, but fool me twice, strike three.
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy, please start.
And so I started.
I'm Bert Kreischer, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio on RadioCentral.com. My name is Will Koontz. Phone line is open. 813-693-2124. You can leave a voice or text message on that line. I encourage you to do so. You can also do a voice memo on your phone if you want to do it that way. And email me, thehomemadebroadcast@radioCentral.com. This week on the show, I always get these messed up. I swear I'm not, I mean, I'm dumb, but I'm not this dumb. My mentor, protege is the opposite of that, right? Okay. My radio mentor, the guy who gave me an opportunity to be on the FM radio weekly with the Johnny B Show on Wednesdays, which I still do. The Johnny B Show, of course. Mr. Johnny B is the guest this week. So we talk about comedy. He's a comedian. He's been doing it a long time. Not that he's old, but he's older, right? I mean, he's put in his time. He's got a booming comedy career here in Tampa Bay. He's got a radio show 5 days a week with his name on it on The Bone, 102.5 The Bone here locally in Tampa Bay. He's an excellent cook. He's got a lot going for him. He gives me cookies every time I go see him in studio. He leaves me Girl Scout cookies every night now, which is awesome and terrible for me at the same time because I can't resist them and I eat them and it's not a good thing. But I certainly appreciate it. It means that he's thinking of me, and that's just sweet as heck. Visit hmbradio.com. We got blogs, podcasts, photos, everything's up there. Check it out. Keep up with creatives living and working in the Tampa Bay area at hmbradio.com. That's Hotel Mike Bravo Radio. Before we get to the interview this week, let's say thank you very much to our sponsors. We don't want to forget about them. Tap House 61. Tap House, the number 6, the number 1.com and Facebook. Same thing. Just search Tap House 61. Wednesday night trivia. People love some trivia, man. They do. And you should check out Tap House 61s because it's one of the better ones here in St. Pete. 2061 Central Avenue, right here in good old St. Petersburg. It's a good time. Make sure you check them out. They got brand new renovations. They got, it's a great place to get a beer. Extended bar now. It's a fun spot. I was just in there the other day. So check it out, taphouse61.com. And Truvy Salon and Spa, T-R-U-V is in victory, Y, salonandspa.com. You ever thought about getting Botox? I'm sure you at least considered it. You know, you can put it wherever you want. just don't keep it to yourself, all right? But if you got wrinkles you want to get rid of, I guess you can inject poison into your body and it does it. Don't ask me how. It's medical science. But the Botox lady comes through there. I think it's once a month. So you should check it out. Go to TruV Salon and Spa, TRUV as in Victory, Y, salonandspa.com. You can make an appointment. And, of course, they do, you know, hair and assorted other spa things, whatever goes on there. I don't know, but I'm sure it's fun as heck. So make an appointment, all right? TruV Salon and Spa.com. You can follow them on Instagram and Facebook as well. I encourage you to do so. So, yes, Johnny B this week on the Homemade Broadcast here on Radio St. Pete. Let's get to it, shall we? Johnny Bell, welcome to the Homemade Broadcast.
Hey, man. It's great to finally be on it.
It's been a long time coming, for sure, and I'm happy to have you, even though I did have to drive all the way to your house in Valrico, but you did make me some delicious soup that I just shoved in my face like a pelican eating a fish.
Here's the funny thing about that. That soup was made in about 5 minutes, and from conception to everything. Like, I was like, I had no idea what I was making. So I opened my refrigerator, and I saw a bunch of broccoli. And I have this brand new gadget called an Instant Pot that you could cook.
Sounds like a sex toy. Is not. It's an actual culinary device.
It's crazy. You can cook anything in, like, seconds. It's like a nuclear meltdown type situation. But I just do broccoli and heavy cream and chicken stock and seasoning into it, and I hit a button, and then we came into my little home studio here, and then we walked out like an hour later, and everybody in the house is eating soup. It was crazy.
Yeah, it is amazing. Technology is something else.
Yeah.
So, Johnny, you are my
mentor.
Mentor, right? Radio mentor. Been a comedian in the area for a long time. I've known of you for many, many, many years, but we finally like met once I started working at the Bone.
Yeah.
And you gave me my first shot on FM radio that has led into the Stay Woke program with Anna Hummel, your other mentor or her mentor for you. What am I trying to say?
Like my other protege. You're both proteges.
Right.
Yeah.
So how did you get into, because you started your backgrounds in stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
So when did you start doing that?
Well, it's funny. it's funny. It's stand-up. I always wanted to be a comic as a kid. I would record with my VCR, different HBO comedy specials. I had records of comedy specials. I had Red Fox comedy specials. I had even like Soupy Sales comedy specials from like the 60s on record. Bill Hicks, I had some records. I had just some really rated X comedy that I should not have had, like the Red Fox. Just all the way down the line, just really, 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 really inappropriate stuff for a kid. But Richard Pryor, I was, I could recite verbatim like three of his specials when I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And I would do it in the front yard from the neighborhood kids, and they loved it. The teenagers would come over, and like, I grew up in Seminole Heights, and they would come over and like, JB, do some Pryor. And I'd go out there, and before you know it, I'm doing Live on the Sunset Strip in my front yard. But
that was a valuable skill, because this was before, you know, you didn't have just instant access with the internet and stuff like that. Like,
no.
That was the closest you had, was some guy repeating it pretty much on demand.
Yeah.
That was on demand back then.
I was Netflix.
Yeah.
You have the fat little white kid with a mullet doing Richard Pryor jokes. but I really love to be, like the center of attention in school. I remember my fifth grade teacher, he called it holding court. He's like, the first couple of weeks of school, he hated my guts. He's like, look, I'm trying to teach, and you're trying to, like, hold court in my class. So then he ended up compromising with me after a couple of weeks. He said, all right, look, I'll let you hold court for 5 minutes after we do roll call, but then it's my class after that. I was like, done, deal. So I would think of the funny stuff I wanted to think of, and I would like try to make the class laugh for 5 minutes. And this is,
was it literally getting up in front of the class and doing like 5 minutes, doing like an open mic,
standing in front of the class. Yeah. Hey guys,
I'm Johnny Bell. I'm your classmate.
Thank you. Keep it going for your math teacher and your host. Yes. He's doing a great job. Mr. Austin. Yeah. Austin, everybody. Yeah. Keep it going. So he ended up loving me. Like, it was his favorite student. I got good grades, but he would let me have 5 minutes. fast forward to almost adulthood. I knew I could. I was actually a singer as a kid too. I kind of sang in some like barbershop quartet, doo-wop type things. I loved music a lot, and I kind of happened to fall into a job at a bar at 17 years old, running karaoke shows because my older brother was drunk and I had to pick him up from a bar one day. It's just a really white trash, dirty, dirty bar. And he wouldn't get in the car until I sang a song and they were running a karaoke show. And I go, please just get in the car. I want to go home. I had to go to work that night. And I think I was still working at like McDonald's. And he said, I'll get in the car when you sing a song. So I got up there and I sang a song. And 2 days later, the owner of the karaoke company said, hey, why don't you come work for us? And you'll run karaoke shows and we'll put you in these rooms where nobody sings and you'll do all the singing. And I'm like, all right, well, how much is that going to pay? $35 a night. And I laughed out loud at how stupid they were for giving me that much money.
Yeah.
You're going to give me that much money? I'm 17 years old. It's 1989. Like, you're an idiot. I'm about to rake it in. So I, that's how I got started in singing. Then by the time I was 21, 22, I was singing in my own band. And I did that for a few years. My lead guitar player, who was like my best friend, he started pointing out how I was changing lyrics in songs to be funny. Like, not to the level of Weird Al Yankovic, but just subtle little things to kind of work the crowd. Maybe I was flirting with a girl. Maybe I was just roasting some dumb dude in the crowd. And then in between songs, I started doing basic material, like holding court, like I was in Mr. Austin's class. So my buddy pulled me aside one day. He goes, look, you're a good singer, dude. You could sing like anybody, but you're a comic. And when he said it, all those records came back to me. All the stuff from my childhood came back. And I go, man, he's right. You know, I thought about holding court in Mr. Austin's class. I thought about always being the funniest guy everywhere I worked and everywhere I went, whether if it was working the line at Denny's or being a prep cook at Olive Garden, always making people laugh. So I went to a workshop. There used to be a comedy club in Tampa called Comedy Works.
Mm-hmm.
It's where Larry the Cable Guy got started, basically, and a lot of guys. And I went there and did a tryout to do 3 minutes the night, the first day I went, and they let me do 3 minutes.
What year was this?
This was, I'd say, 1994 or 1995.
Okay. So this wasn't the 80s when everybody was getting paid a bunch of money to do comedy. This was after the bump.
It was kind of the lull in comedy.
Yeah.
Comedy had a boom in the early 80s and really crushed it during the 80s. The 90s, a real slip. And then early 2000s, a resurgence happened, which was right when I kind of hit the scene. 1995, I did that 3 minute guest spot. They asked me to come back to another comedy club the next day, which is Side Splitters. And not to talk crap about the owner, we're friends now, but I went up and I was supposed to do 3 minutes that night. Second day doing comedy, I did 4 minutes. I went over. I kind of didn't see the flashlight they give you in the back of the room. And when I got off stage, I guess I caught him on the wrong night, but he chewed me out in front of everybody. Just call me name, like, USOB, how do you do this? Like, you know, I'm paying my headliner so much, and you come in here, you just start, you're just green, and you'll never work in this business if you do that. And I was, not only did I have a band, but I was DJing at the time, 5 nights a week at a club, and I was making pretty good money, you know, making tips and spinning records. So, and I got that job basically because I was a comic and didn't know it. I got up, and when I would work the crowd, and I made the manager laugh, and he gave me a job and all this stuff. And when that happened at the comedy club the second night, I said, I don't want to do stand-up, man, if this is what it is. So for 6 years, I never hit another stand-up stage. And then when the Tampa Improv opened up in 2000, they had this big open call, open mic contest. You know, it was going to be $100 for first place. And my wife at the time, my first wife, my son's mom, her brother or cousin-in-law, yeah, it was like a cousin-in-law, he was in a construction crew working on the Improv, and he's like, yeah, I saw this sign that they put up front that said, you know, they're going to do this big comedy contest, and he's like, you should do it. And I was like, I don't know. So I thought of it, wrote down, you know, good 5 minutes of material, and I went and did it. 35 comics showed up, local open micers and whatnot, and I won. So they had me from there. So at that point, anything the improv did, as far as they didn't really have an open mic then. They had showcases and workshops. So I would hit everything I could do and then build it up. So it's been 18 years later, and here I am. Man, I'm famous.
Still plugging away, yeah.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, I'm comfortably headlining pretty much every show I do, even if it's a pub somewhere. But I headline off nights mainly on the main, you know, on the A rooms, like the Improv. I've been very lucky to open for big acts and big venues. I was Ralphie May's regular Southeast opener for a long time. He passed away in October, so now I got to try to find another way to get back to the theaters, like these big 3,000 seaters. You know, I'm doing Hard Rock Live and the Straz and Mahaffey and Capitol, and like he was taking me everywhere. It was awesome. So I've gotten a lot of experience, and I'm comfortable with any setting, which is kind of cool. I'm a utility comedy player. Like I can host if somebody needs me to host. I'm not too big in my britches to do that. And I can do an hour and 30 minutes if you need me to. Like, I got a ton of material, so I'm very comfortable with that. So
how has the comedy scene changed from when you started to what you see now? What's different? What's worse? What's better? That type of stuff.
It's not that much different. It's just I'm looking at it from a elder's perspective now, to where when I first started out, there were a lot of things that were different. Was there wasn't a lot of gigs to be had that paid money. One of those things, I guess one of the reasons why, is because I was new. And back, you know, 20 years ago, you didn't make money for a while. Like, you wouldn't even expect to make money for 2-3 years.
And there wasn't like an independent scene where people were booking their own shows.
Not a lot. There was a couple little things going on, but not really. I got really lucky. I had a regular room besides the Improv. There used to be, like, I live in Brandon now, and I've lived in Brandon for most of my adult life. There was a tiny, tiny comedy club in Brandon right when I started doing comedy, when the Improv opened, called Wacky Weavers. Just a C-minus room. Just
with that name, I don't see how it could be good.
Well, the owner was a comic from the 80s named Don Weaver.
Okay.
And he was great, but he was just a smarmy, just almost gave you this, like, car salesman scammer vibe,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
But
perfect comedy club owner. Then.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, if you were booking a movie and you needed to book somebody to play the role of a smarmy comic club owner, that's your guy. Just like Bobby Jewell over at Side Splitters. Like, and it's not an insult to Bobby Jewell, but guy, he has the Tom Selleck mustache. Yep. He just has this air about him that I've been doing this shit for a long. Oh, sorry,
it's okay.
I've been doing this poo poo for a long time, kid. And you know, he just has an air about him, and it works, especially for that the atmosphere. But Don Weaver, he let me go up every week. They were only open Fridays and Saturdays. It was in the corner of a brew house that was basically a big bar that they had sectioned off. It held maybe 50 people. And I told him, I said, if I can come up and do a guest set every weekend, that'd be great. And he goes, fine. It somehow developed into me being the house feature act. I was doing 20 minutes each show, two shows every Friday and Saturday for free. Never got paid. But he also was the first one to headline me. Way before I should have been headlined. He goes, man, people, you have a big following. Because I was, my regular job, I was dealing poker at the Hard Rock at the time. So I had all these poker dealers and players and a whole casino full of people that love me. And they would all show up to any show I did, even though I was not real good back then. And he gave me my first headline, put me on they had these old school flyers with the calendar and all the headshots of all the headliners. And my headshot was so horrible too. It was garbage. Just, I don't know if it was a Polaroid or what, but he put me on there, and they had standing room only, and it was really cool. But I got a lot of practice, so that's kind of the difference. Now there's a ton of open mics, there's a ton of like crappy paid gigs, which it annoys me a little bit to see how like real amateurs are booking way too many shows where the whole show is amateurs, like not only opening but also headlining, like that should not be headlining, and then they're charging people to get in. And I see this all the time on Facebook and everywhere else. It's like, all right, I don't mind that you have 10 comics going up and none of them are that good.
Yeah, yeah.
But don't charge people 10, 15 bucks.
I saw one that was 25 bucks
yeah.
to get into. And I was like, are you out of your mind? And yeah. all the comics on there, I was like, first of all, half of them I haven't even heard of.
Right.
Ever. And then the other half, I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Ouch.
When you notice bad ones on the lineup.
Yeah.
And I'm in a position now, thank God, that I book most of my shows. Like, what I do is I don't really even pursue too many venues. They usually come to me now. That, you know, radio has, you know, kind of afforded me that kind of popularity. So I stay pretty busy just by venues reaching out and saying, how can I get Johnny B from 102.5 The Bone to play my room? And then I give them a number. I give them a budget. And it's always fair because I'm just happy to be on stage.
Right.
I'm not trying to break the bank. I want them to get a good show, and I want to get a few free beers out of it, maybe an appetizer and a little bit of cash in my pocket, and I'm out the door. I'm not trying to rob anybody, which a lot of people in my position would try to use that. Like, oh, you want Johnny B from the radio station? Well, empty your pockets, you know. But I'm happy, and then I'll give them a budget, and the budget will be enough for me and then enough for me to pay two of my friends that I know are funny. That way, that show is going to be great. And you've seen me book shows, and we have mutual friends I put on. And I've even came to you and said, you know, what do you think about this guy? He's your friend. I haven't really seen his stand-up. And if you vouch for him, then I'll offer him money, and I'll pay him to do a show. And I've been the guy that's paid people before anybody else. So, and I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that people say, man, my first time ever getting paid, Johnny B paid me. Or my first feature set, Johnny B took me on the road to Sebring or to Vero Beach or something, because I see talent and I'd be willing to let them get to that next level. But at the same time, I'm going to book talent. Like, so this weekend I'm doing a show and it's Chris Mattson and John J. Murray opening up for me. John J. Murray will go on stage first because he's not as funny as Chris Mattson. Sorry, if you're listening, John J. Murray, sorry. You're great. But Chris Mattson's funny.
He's a bit, I love Chris Mattson. I want to hang out with him so bad, but he yeah. doesn't drink.
He don't.
And like, I feel like the only thing to do really is like, let's go get a beer.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't drink. I'm like, oh, well, crap. I guess we can't hang then. He's can't be buds.
He's a great guy, too. And his dad, rest in peace, passed away. Not too long ago, was a musician, and Chris plays a little guitar, so we have that kind of kindred thing going on. Mm-hmm. And he's a chef. Like, he cooks, and that's also in my past. I've done that for a living, and I'm into the food scene now big time. I know a lot of local chefs. So we have a lot in common as far as that goes. He's also one of the guys that I kind of mentored coming up when he hit the scene. He hit the scene at really the same time as a lot of really great guys that are working in the industry now, guys like Matt Fernandez, guys like JB Ball, and just a lot of people that are successfully making money at comedy now. Chris also, kind of like me, went and started a family. You know, he got married. You know, he has this beautiful wife. She's a nurse, and then now he's got a pretty real professional job, like suit and tie job. So I like to grab him out of reality once in a while and put him on stage because he's hysterical. Like, he's so
He's got to get some of that energy out.
He loves
I mean, it's
got
to be building up inside of him.
Yeah.
So he doesn't get to come out, you know, to open mics and stuff anymore. Which I don't either. Like,
no.
Now doing the radio show at night.
Me neither.
People say, hey, come to my show on Wednesday. I'm like, I can't.
I would love to. And I'm afraid that the local comedy scene thinks that I'm too arrogant to show up to an open mic. Not the case. I've said this. If something ever happens and I either make it in radio or I don't make it in radio and it frees up my nights, I'm going to hit every stage I can because I love stand-up. I love to make people laugh. Do I like making money at it? Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
But I would do it for free, just like I would do radio for free. I hope our bosses aren't listening, but I'm almost doing it for free.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's the same reason. When I book a show, I don't try to rob anybody because I just want my lights to come on when I get home every night. I just want it, you know, to have gas in my car and food, a lot of food, and I'm pretty happy. But mm-hmm. Yeah, the stand-up scene's good now. I think the resurgence is it happened in the early 2000s, and I think it dipped a few years ago again a little bit. But I think it's coming back again thanks to Netflix has really put stand-up in a really good light again. People are watching more Netflix than they are cable TV. I'm not making that up. The numbers say it. And the biggest thing people look at on Netflix are stand-up specials. Everybody that's successful now, it's Netflix. It used to be HBO. It used to be Comedy Central. Now it's Netflix.
They
now,
put out one a day, right? The Netflix specials?
Easily. I read somewhere that they buy 30,000 comedy specials a year, and they use the ones they want to use, and they put the other ones, they archive them. You can almost search any comic you know, and they probably have some sort of a special laying around the internet somewhere. So
it is cool, like, even seeing, you know, some of the local, like, John Jacobs posted a picture from his mic. He had 40 people yeah. come out and do the open mic on a Tuesday night.
I saw that.
10 at night to 3 in the morning.
Yeah. That's New York. That's LA kind of numbers.
And I don't know what they're like. Like, I haven't watched anybody in such a long time.
Yeah.
But it has gotten, I don't know if you noticed, but there used to be the Cigar City crew that was kind of leading the way, and they had a really tight group.
Yeah.
All of them were very funny.
I'm part of that
yeah,
group.
Yeah. 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 I know. I'm just saying that that was a tight crew of serviceable comedians at the very least.
Yeah, even the worst comics in Cigar City were pretty good.
Right. yeah, totally. Johnny B's on the Homemade Broadcast this week. He's a comedian and broadcaster. You can hear him at 10 p.m. Monday through Friday on 102.5 The Bone, theboneonline.com. Where do you think this is going, comedy, as far as with this PC stuff that's leaking out? I wrote a scathing piece on local comedians on hmbradio.com, which I'm waiting to get some what the hells, but yeah. I'm totally prepared for it. I don't have anything to lose. What are you going to say to me?
I guess. I got to tell you, for the first time in a long time, I'm a little scared of how things are going. When comics are becoming PC police, we're in a bad place. It's bad enough that you have comics losing gigs, losing revenue and popularity with saying something on stage. And it doesn't help when you have comics that are doing really heinous stuff and getting caught for it. Like the guy that I idolize more than anything the last 10 years is Louis C.K. And he got caught with the sexual harassment stuff. And now everybody hates his guts, you know, and I don't hate his guts. I feel bad that he has some sort of twisted sickness that made him do the things
he did. What did he do? What do you think that was so bad that he did?
Well, here's the thing. We all in the industry, we all knew about it. Like, I knew about it. Everybody knew about it. What he would do, I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a hazing type of situation because I've been not to that extreme, but I've had headliners do wacky stuff to me. But what he would do is he would go into the green room, like your waiting area for comics. Normally it has a couch, a chair, maybe a TV, whatever. Different clubs, different calibers have different quality green rooms. But what he would do is whoever his opener was, if it was a female, he would go in and he would shut the door behind him and he would kind of stand in front of the door. And he would ask them if it was...
There's the key word.
Yes.
Ask.
He would ask, would you mind if I pleasured myself in front of you?
Mm-hmm.
And whether they said yes or no, he would do it anyway.
Oh, he did. See, I thought if they said no, he wouldn't do it.
No.
Oh, okay. No, all right, no. That's a problem. Can't do that. Shouldn't do that.
That's where the crime comes. So
it's not a crime, though, is it? I guess you could say it's exposure or something, yeah, but that's just a fine.
Right.
$50.
He didn't go to jail, but he lost his television gig. He lost.
You think he'll be back?
Yeah. Yeah, he'll be back within 3 years.
Yeah, I think
it'll
so
blow
too.
Over. He's just so good at comedy. And it was, you want to say it's a victimless crime to a certain extent because he didn't touch anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing, you know, physical happened. Mm-hmm. It's totally mental. But from what I hear, and not to, you know, make excuses that, you know, to say that, that you should, he should get away with it. Like, it's definitely wrong. It's a scumbaggy thing to do. But I've known female comics that knew about him doing it, and I would ask, what do you do in that situation? Because I've worked with everybody. I used to be the house MC at the Improv for 5 years, so I've known a lot of people. And I remember asking a female comic, and I'm not going to say her name, but I said, well, what would you do if that happened to you? And she's like, I always was ready for it. Like, if I ever got booked with him, I was just ready for it to happen.
Here we go.
And yeah. She's like, I would just laugh. I would laugh. I go, look at that. I'm going through the Louis C.K.
the initiation
bit.
Yeah.
Here we are. I made it. Yeah. It's the next step in my career. So I don't know too many people that were mortified by it. And it seems like it all came out after all the other hashtag Me Too stuff started coming out, which I think is, I still back that movement almost fully. I mm-hmm. think a lot of people abused it as anything gets abused.
Yep.
You know, people are going to come out of woodwork, and people that want to try to profit from something are going to try to jump on that train too. But I think mostly that was a great thing, because for, I don't know how many years, women were victims and also looked upon as lesser people in a lot of jobs, a lot of industry, but this was mainly entertainment, whether it be actors or comedians or anything like that, all the way down to non-entertainment jobs where girls get, sexual, pressure or even rape from their higher ups, and they just have to shut up and not say anything. Now they have a voice, but I've talked about this on my regular radio show. There should be levels of
right
of this crime.
There's just like murder. There's first degree, second degree, third degree. There should be with this too. But you can't claim everything is rape, because I feel like that trivializes rape.
Yes, but they lump everything together. It's like, okay, Harvey Weinstein basically raped people so that they could be successful.
A monster, yeah, for sure. Deviant.
Right, but then they lump him and Louis C.K. in the same category. It's not close to me.
Right.
You know,
it's definitely way different.
Yeah. There's not a lot of people that are at home cutting themselves because they opened for Louis C.K. They're not messed up.
Right. Do you have are you a little worried? Because you do have stuff to lose now. You got a radio show. You're doing comedy. You're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
If somebody hears something,
yeah,
they'll go to the boss and say, hey, what the heck? And then I feel like I wish the bosses would think about it a little bit and say, people have a short-term memory. You know, we'll handle this in-house.
Right.
But it's, you need a knee-jerk reaction with this stuff. They'll can you.
I've been told by the bosses in radio to be careful, which it's so hard to wrap my head around it, because the beauty of stand-up comedy is people come to see you at a venue. You should, and you do have freedom of speech. You're allowed to say whatever you want. There's no law against me going on stage and saying pretty much anything I want to say, except for, you know, I'm going to kill a government figure or something. You can't say that, obviously. Please, nobody isolate
that. They do it all the time. They talk about killing Trump at open mics all the
time. Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
If I say that now, I'm and somebody gets that audio, I'm done. And even with the risque material that I'm known to do, I am what they call a blue comic. And that term goes way, way back, you know. I've just found out why they call it blue comedy about a year ago. It's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, go ahead, tell it.
When stand-up comedy first hit the scene in like the 30s, 40s, 50s, there was no comedy show. There was no comedy club. It was only variety shows. So you would legit most of the time be paired up with burlesque dancers and magicians and things like that. Well, anytime somebody in one of these shows would say something risque, talk about sex, talk about anything like that, they would put that material, somebody that was part of the show, like running the show, would write down a quick bullet point, little shorthand note on what that bit was, and they would put it in a blue envelope, and they would hand it to the guy after the show and go, hey, you know, don't do this ever again. So that blue envelope, it just become known as blue material. So, because I didn't know what it meant for a long time. Why is it blue? Why don't you just call it like...
I thought it was because it was sad. Or, like, oh, I'm a little blue today.
Oh, it should be called brown because, you know, it's potty. So there's just a lot of cases now where comics are losing gigs. The biggest one I can think of, there is a comic and, oh, man, I am not, my brain is fried right now. I'm brain farting. Filipino comic, very, very funny, very popular, sells out theaters. He was on,
it's not Dat Phan, is it?
No, he's Vietnamese.
Same thing.
No, not really. but he was on, Chelsea Handler's show and everything. He got his own.
Joe Coy?
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you. I've worked with him and I can't remember his name. He murders, by the way.
Yeah, he's like really famous too.
Well, here's the thing.
He's got an intense following.
The beauty of, and this is not to sound racist, but I've worked with many, many different cultures. The beauty of having a cultural like following, whether it be a BET comic that is really great, like black people will come out and support them. And a lot of white people will too, because white people love black people. It's just, it's the trend.
They do.
I'm on that boat.
Hell yeah.
I love me some black people. But the Asian comics have the most loyal following, and Hispanic, same thing.
Russell Peters with Indians, he's like, that's their guy.
He's worldwide.
Yeah.
He is the most.
He's super rich too. Like, I looked him up, his net worth.
He's the most successful comic in the world.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. He'll go to India, sell out a stadium, go to England, sell out a stadium, go to San Francisco. It doesn't matter. He is the man.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, the following, anybody of anything South Asian, they're there.
Yep.
Bobby Lee. Very funny guy, Mad TV guy, everything else. Every Asian person in Florida, if he goes to the improv, you better buy your tickets early. Done. Joe Coy, every Filipino in Florida, buy your tickets early. And there's a lot of Filipino people in Florida, a lot. Well, Joe Coy did a show. This has been probably 4 years ago, I'd say. He did a show in California, and his zipper was down a little bit because he had went to the bathroom before the show. We've all done it. Some guy in the front row said, hey, your zipper's down or whatever, and just reactionary, just being funny, crowd work. He said, hey, he goes, oh, thanks, fag, is what he said to the guy, right?
Funny joke, too. In context, that's a funny joke.
The whole crowd laughed.
Yeah.
You know, and was he telling the guy he was a gay person? No, he was just hamming it up like you would do with a buddy or something like that. Well, there was a blogger in the audience who's a very famous lesbian blogger. She went on a rampage online, and before you know it, he had just inked a deal for $5 million for his own sitcom. It gets yanked after this blog goes crazy online because he said that line to that guy, and my first thought was, are we able to say what we want now? And that was my point that I'll loop it back around to. Yes, I can say what I want this Saturday when I do my show. But if the radio station doesn't like what I said, they can fire me. That has nothing to do with freedom of speech. Freedom of speech guarantees that the cops won't show up and take me to jail like they did Lenny Bruce.
Right.
But freedom of speech doesn't protect you from consequences of your action. So if they want to fire me from my day job, from my radio job, if they want to kick me out of this rental house that I have, all that can be done if somebody doesn't like something that I said in a public forum. It has nothing to do with freedom of speech. It has to do with, I don't like what you said. Get your butt out of here. You know, so with that being in my head, I'm scared to death, but I still do my show. But when I do my podcast now, it's a lot safer than it was before I was in terrestrial radio. I did some really heinous, brutal bits. I mean, funny? Yeah, I'll back them. Funny. But looking back, I listened to some of my podcast from 5 years ago, 6, 7 years ago, and I laugh at how unbelievably unacceptable they would be.
If it was taken out of context, yeah. That's the thing that is scares me a little bit, is the fact that context is important. You know what I mean? These are, yes, just the word itself, if you look at it, or a phrase, can be offensive.
Yes.
But if it's used in context, it's funny.
Right.
Sorry, you're being intentionally naive here with this stuff, and you're just trying to, I don't know, you're going to ruin somebody's life because they said, called somebody a fag?
I mean, come on, man. I never got that either. Like, when somebody goes after your job, they don't care about what that does to somebody. I've had people try to get me fired multiple times from radio, from my poker dealing jobs, because they don't like what I said. It was scathing to them, or they didn't agree with my opinion. So they thought, you know what? I'll get this guy. I'll get him fired. And my first thought is, I'm a single dad. Yeah. I'm raising a child.
Right.
Are you going to take food out of that kid's mouth? What is that going to do for you? Is it going to make you money? Is it going to make you happy? I mean, what kind of sick, horrible human are you to know that
to be that petty and vindictive?
Yes,
and, yeah.
To know that I'm going to lose everything possibly, and that I am going to have to struggle and go get government assistance to feed my kid because you didn't like a joke I said? Who are you?
It's unreal, man.
Yeah.
It really is. I would be shaking in my boots if I were you. You got a lot to lose.
I am, but at the same time, I don't like to live with regret, and I would rather lose everything and build myself back up and do, you know, what is true to me than to turn into something I'm not and then have to look at myself in the mirror and go, wow, nice corny, not you, hacky set you put up there tonight. Yeah, way to go, corporate Johnny, you jerk.
Do you ever do you get into politics at all in your comedy?
No, I don't. I'll dabble in it if it happens to fall into the context of something that I'm writing. But I don't, even though I have a ton of opinions on politics, religion, things like that, I don't like to divide my audience if I don't have to. That's one of my rules that I learned from some of the guys that mentored me when I started out.
Now, that can be good in radio, not in comedy, though.
Right. And that's if you're... It's good in radio.
If they listen to you because they hate you, that's just as valuable as people who listen to you that like you.
Absolutely. Well, the thing with radio and me, I give you 100% of me in radio. So my opinions on radio, on my radio programs, are 100% my opinions. I don't respect the guys that play devil's advocate because that's what makes good radio. I get what they're doing, but I don't want to do it that way. If it takes me longer to be successful, then it does. But I like to give you an honest opinion because I think intelligent listeners can hear BS if you're not giving them your real opinion. So if I give you my opinion on politics, it's my real opinion. Luckily for me, I'm pretty moderate when it comes to most things. I like to be logical and kind of see things from both sides. I'm never going to be just staunch one side, staunch the other, because I think that's a shallow way of thinking. I think everybody has some good ideas on things. I think everybody has bad ideas. I think at the end of the day, in politics, they're all scumbags. I really think just being in politics, you already start with one foot in the grave with me, and now you got to prove to me that you're a good person. And as far as religion goes, I've been very open with that too. I'm not a religious person. I'm not a atheist, but I'm also moderate when it comes to religion. I'm a very honest agnostic, and I'm proud to say that because I don't think any of us are smart enough to know what really is going on. If you want to have faith, I respect that. I think religion is good because it polices people. If you didn't have people afraid of going to hell or, you know, consequences for their actions, it'd just be complete chaos. It'd be Game of Thrones. Everybody'd be killing each other for, you know, food and whatever. So I'm glad religion's there, but I think everything's BS. And I don't think when I hear everybody's angle on their religion, I think, God, you sound so stupid. How do you believe in that? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I'm not going to say, you know, there's no God because somebody had to make all this.
I don't understand why people make a judgment call, like especially atheists who are like, no, it's not real. It's like, you don't know that.
Right.
How would you even prove that?
How
I know it's certainly unlikely, it appears.
Right.
But to make that leap, I think I'll sit on that fence forever. I don't care. You know, I have no problem doing that. Why do you need to claim that it's just, you know, bunk?
Yes. To me, an atheist, a really diehard, just strong opinion atheist is as bad as your poor man's evangelist, the guy that, you know, works at Circle K but wants to tell you about how you should be saved and stuff like.
Yeah,
I don't. Both of your opinions are dumb and they're falling on deaf ears with me because I was raised by an engineering professor who's a genius level mind, and he never forced religion on me, and he told me why. You know, he goes, look, I want you to figure this out on your own. If you think you know what the answers are, then go with it. But I'm not going to force any belief down your throat. And that's, he goes,
I'm not
going to
mock anybody's beliefs.
No.
If they feel strongly about it, because I certainly don't know.
Right. Good. Yeah. I have real good friends that are strong Christians, and I have really good friends that are atheists. Mm-hmm. You know, I tell them, look, it's just like my stand-up. Just not talk about it.
As long as you're a good person, that's really all that matters. If you're nice to me,
yeah,
I'll be nice to you. We can be buds.
Yeah.
That's really all that matters. I don't care what you believe.
I don't either. I don't care your race. I don't care your religion. I am like the most open-minded person with anything. I don't care about any of that. I don't care what kind of movies you like, what kind of music you like. Just don't be a jerk to me. I won't be a jerk to you. And
don't try to get you fired.
Don't try to get me fired. Don't try to, you know, bang my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. You know, we're good.
That's it. Yeah. That's a key to life right there. Johnny B, thank you so much for being on this week. Where can people find you?
You can find me on johnnybcomedy.com is my website. You can find me on Twitter at johnnybcomedy. Of course, you can hear my radio program Monday through Friday in the Tampa market on 102.5 FM. You can go to theboneonline.com and you can stream it, or you can look for the replay feature or the feature cut of the day and listen at your leisure. And there's also an app for that if you search 102.5. Check out my schedule on my website and come see me do stand-up.
Very
and,
good.
Hopefully you don't report me for saying something really, really bad.
We won't. Thank you, Johnny.
All right, buddy.
There you go, Mr. Johnny B. Always a pleasure. I was actually on his podcast this week, too. If you head over to johnnybcomedy.com, check out the podcast with me and John, if you just didn't quite get enough. And how could you not, frankly? 813-693-2124 if you want to give us a shout. HMBradio.com. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Just put in HMB, as in boy, radio, all one word, Tampa Bay. It'll come right up there. And rate and subscribe while you're there. It only takes a second. Really helps us out. And stay woke. Midnights. 102.5 The Bone here locally in Tampa Bay. TheBoneOnline.com. You can listen. My name is Will Koontz. This is the Homemade Broadcast. This is HMB Radio on Radio St. Pete. We'll see you next week. Later.
Problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more. Problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more.